name is Beth Lockhart. We're here tonight to give an opportunity for the deaf and hard of hearing people here to tell you a little bit about their lives and how they vary, and for you to have an opportunity to find out more about what you've always wanted to know about deafness but were afraid to ask, or maybe never had the opportunity. This lady here, she is not deaf, but she has a deaf son that you adopted when he was a baby, is that right? 8 months old? Right? And Mary has been deaf since birth, okay? And Mike?
I don't know his dad.
You'll find out shortly about me.
What I remember about them, what we had talked about, that you will be free to
disagree.
But you don't really have to respond at the end. We're just hoping that you will feel comfortable or free to ask questions. And remember that they don't have to feel pressured to answer the question, they can pass. So those will be what the rules are. When we talk also, we'd like you to raise your hand. Okay, and I will serve as a half moderator and half participant, because we've got a small deaf group here at Golden Village this year. Okay. Brenda? Okay.
Excuse me. Are you doing this? I just want to add one note about the understanding for this time. Just want to remind you all that the official end of the forum will be in 1 hour. And so if you could come to a clear close then, that'd be great. But if you want to keep talking quietly later, that's fine too. But just to give people a chance to be finished at the end of the hour. Great.
That's fantastic.
Fantastic. Thank you. Okay. Now, to start with, I would like each of you to tell a little bit about yourself, your background, etc., how you became deaf, or in your case, how you adopted your deaf son, and we'll proceed along in this matter. Would you like to start? Tell them about yourself, please.
My name is Brenda Geyer. I grew up in this area. I adopted Danny. He was 8 months old. He was born in Calcutta, India. He was born premature, about 6 weeks. And he was very sick for the first about 3 months of his life. He had jaundice, he had meningitis, he had seizures, he was septic, and they didn't really think he would live, but he's a very strong little fellow, and he pulled through, and they put him, they made him available for adoption when he was about 5 months old, and my paperwork was being completed then, so they offered me him. I knew at that point, at 5 months, that he had some cerebral palsy, and that after I said yes, I'd be interested in adopting him, they wrote me another letter and said, by the way, we don't think he hears. And I didn't believe them. I thought maybe in Calcutta, India, they didn't have any way to diagnose something like that at 5 months of age. And I had friends who told me that it probably was just a wax block in the ears. So we went ahead with the adoption, but it was clear very soon that he really could not hear, although it took us about 5 months to convince the doctors of that. From the time he was 14 months old then, we started, we got his hearing aids, we started with sign language. The public schools have sign language classes for family and parents, and so we started right away. We started in a parent-infant program out of the University of Washington, where we had a home teacher who came out once a week and worked with me and Danny about communication issues, how to keep him. I remember one of our first challenges was getting him to keep his hearing aids on, and he was like 15 months at this point, and we put him on and he'd pull them off, and we'd put him on and I'd go, no, because I learned how to say no real early. Danny, you have to keep him on, you know, and I'd put him back on and he'd pull it off. The home teacher told me that with deaf children, they get a lot of communication through your expression of your face and body language too. It's not just your voice, because they can't hear your voice. So she said, I'm going to show you what to do. So the next time we put the hearing aids on Danny, he pulled them off, and the teacher, Carolyn, looked at Danny and goes, no, Danny, get on! And burst into tears. Carolyn felt kind of bad. But he left them on. And then, of course, waiting for him to sign, I remember we'd been signing for about 3 months, and his first word that he signed was candy. And we were sitting at a table, and I looked at him and I said, I think he signed candy. And so I gave him a piece of candy. And he's very smart. He signed it again. I gave him so much candy that night, he threw up. Anyway, it's been very interesting being a parent of a deaf child. It's been a real challenging and an eye-opening and a wonderful experience. And I should stop talking and give other people a chance.
How old is he now?
He's now 7.
That's really neat. Danny is a real handful, I think. He's full of energy. I thank you for helping here at Holy Village. Now, Mary?
I was born deaf because of German measles. My mother had when she was 40. She was in her late 40s. And I was raised at a residential school. Well, let me back up a little bit. First, I went to a mainstream school for a very brief time, 1 or 2 years, and then I transferred to a residential school. And so I grew up, I grew up, and now I'm married. Really fell in love with a man at the residential school, too. We got married, and we have 2 children. Two kids, ages 8 and 10, and the girl is a 10-year-old, and the boy is 8. Where is he?
There's Angela.
Yeah. Angela's over there. Anyway, that's all I'm going to say right now.
Okay, thank you very much. Next.
My name is Michael. I'm a strong Irish Catholic boy, man. My deafness, premature, through premature birth.
Yeah.
She has.
I have 3 minutes, okay, time out, change. I was born, come on. I was supposed to be born in February of 53, but I was born in July. In September, I was supposed to be born, and I was born in July. And so I was premature. And those kinds of premature births at that time, there were massive death rates at that time, until they found out a way of taking care of preemies and helping them keep alive with different support systems. And so I was put in an incubator, you know, for 40 days. And you have to understand that at that time, the doctors were figuring out, you know, they didn't realize the different side effects of putting a child in an incubator, maybe blindness, you can't tell. In my left eye, I am legally blind, and in my right eye, I have some vision impairment. She spilled my Okay, in my left eye, I'm legally blind, and so forth. Okay. And this was all due to that pure oxygen.
Harmony Hall.
Harmony Hall. Thank you very much. You helped a little bit at that time. I went to a camp at Harmony Hall, and my mom brought me there, and they were wondering what to do with there, what to do with me as a baby. And, you know, they put me in this, like, tent, and my mother was standing next to a person who was doing an evaluation. And they were telling my mother that they were going to put me into a mentally retarded institution because it wouldn't be worth the burden to the family because of all of the side effects that this has caused to my body when I was an infant then. And so they didn't know what exactly was wrong, but they were trying to figure things out, and they went to doctor after doctor after doctor after doctor. And one day, there was somebody who was really interested with my father,
a truck driver,
yes. And he was thinking and very concerned and quite involved with our family. And so he stopped. He said, stop going to different doctors. You're done. Son is deaf. You don't have to go to any more doctors and bring him to any more doctors. And he's going to have just, you know, a little speech. He's going to have to go to a speech therapist.
No.
Okay, you're going to do it. Do it. Go ahead. Go. Speech. No, you're going. You're doing it now. Speech therapist.
Back in 56.
He's going to never come back.
So they. You know, at a Catholic school, all the people about either my age or older who were Catholic were against the public. Were against the publics, you know, the Catholics against the publics.
You
know, remember that?
You know that for sure.
Oh, you know, I'm sure it's pretty much the same with the Lutherans sticking together, you know. Anyway, maybe you never met that many Catholics, I don't know. Anyway, that's the way it was. So I was at the Catholic school from about age 5 to 13, and then
stopped.
I stopped. I had to do that because of Beth's expression. He was saying, stop it, stop it, stop it. Give other people the opportunity to talk. You know, give the audience time to ask some questions. Boy, isn't that good stuff?
About myself now, I was born hearing. Are you interested in hearing? Yes, I was born hearing. I grew up and went to a Lutheran school in California, and at age 6 and a half, I contracted spinal meningitis and lost all of my hearing overnight. It was really fast, really. It was difficult for my parents, especially. So I was already talking and reading by the time when I became deaf, which is really different from other deaf people who, when they lose their hearing at birth, anyways. I grew up in, I went into oral school, into an oral system, and I was mainstream. I never went to a deaf institute, but my parents, really didn't want me to go to the institute. So I went to a regular public school that was near my home where I tried my best to understand the things that were happening in the classroom. I didn't have an interpreter until I was in high school. The last 2 years of high school, finally I got an interpreter. And I had that interpreter as I graduated and went. And I said, suppose now if I asked about an education about deafness, let's say that there's a controversy right now, would you say a little bit about Danny's education? What kind of experience have you had? And also, what convinced you that sign language with Danny would be best? I know with my parents, they refused to sign as I was growing up.
And I believe it's very, very different now for deaf children than it was even 15 or 20 years ago. Because back 15 or 20 years ago, the belief was that if you signed to children, they would not learn to speak. And since the goal was to enter them into the hearing world by teaching them how to speak, they were parents were not encouraged to learn sign. They were not made, you know, classes were not available to them. And the children themselves were punished in the school for signing. And I mean, some children, or adults now, tell terrible stories of how they were treated when they tried to communicate. It's very different now. We have Danny in what's called a total communication program, which means we use every means possible to help him understand the meaning of what we're trying to say. So that includes sign, that includes voice, that includes helping him to learn to use the hearing that he does have. He is what we consider profoundly deaf, and the classes of deafness go from mild, moderate, severe, profound, and complete. And very few people are completely deaf, but Danny's in the very next group, which is profound. But with his hearing aids, and with auditory training, and with speech therapy, you know, he can learn to use some residual hearing, so we work on that. The signing is, of course, key. Expression, finger spelling, every method we can use to help him understand. So that's the program he's in. He has interpreters. This year, he started school at 3. They start the children at age 3, and he's gone all day since he was 3 years old. This last year, he was in a hearing impaired classroom in the morning, and in the afternoon, three of the older children in the class went to a regular kindergarten with an interpreter. So he experienced a regular kindergarten with an interpreter, and that's as he goes through the public school system, he will spend some time in the self-contained classroom with special emphasis on reading, communication, speech, and will mainstream out for things like math and art and PE and other activities. And different children mainstream to different activities at different grade levels, and it's all individually based. He's in a classroom with 7 children and 2 teachers. They get a tremendous amount of support and help for the children and for the parents. So it's a very different world now than it was.
If I compare Danny and my conversation with him this afternoon to children I had in Seattle 20 years ago, it is very different. We were sitting there and he asked me if I had an animal. I told him I had a cat. And during the conversation, he understood everything I said about my cat, and then he teased me and told me that while I was here at Holden Village, my cat was at home putting on all my clothes and driving around the town in an orange car. I was just amazed. Just amazed. In a delightful sense of humor. Yeah, we're just signing to me. Signing. Just signing all of us.
Okay, Mary and Mike, maybe both of you can talk about your school years, your experiences, what has happened in school.
Well, during my elementary years, really they called primary for me at that time at the residential school, during that time the students did not sign, they were all deaf. They did not sign. It was great. It was lousy, really, but it was awful. The residential school was awful. It had no excuse. But at that time, they were learning. And so when I arrived in high school, I learned a lot of sign and became very aware of what had preceded me in terms of the history of what had happened. There were no deaf teachers there. They were all hearing teachers, and they were all very strictly oral. They had the oral philosophy that deaf children should be using their voices and whatnot. And so it was time to change, and deaf teachers started coming on staff. And I can remember I was singing with one of the teachers, and playing the piano. She was playing the piano, and I was using my voice at the residential school, and I didn't know what was going on, but or what I was saying. But I was interested in singing, and the teacher was very excited about this and singing, and so she forced us all to do that. And we were not allowed to use sign language. And in the dorm, though, all of us kids just generated conversation in sign language all of the time. But in the class, it was totally different. But then I arrived in high school, and in high school, I had deaf teachers. And I looked at them, and oh, I was just intrigued. And they were signing. They were deaf. And I was shocked, and they were signing, and I was so excited, and I learned so much more and more and more vocabulary. I picked up language just right and left. And so I learned a lot from the deaf, and much more than from the hearing, who didn't know sign language. There was nothing. So I was really happy to join high school and to learn more about deaf culture. And I was very inquisitive about the background of the deaf adults who were there, and I would ask them questions, and they gave me much information. And at home, my mom and dad didn't know much, but they were thrilled to be informed also for me. And then I was able to interact with other deaf people around, and it was just wonderful.
Okay, Mike, could you add something more to that?
Well, age 5. I'm going to go slow for the interpreter, I guess. You know, during that time, there were different options. Well, I suppose you went to public school, you know. How many students in the class? About 50, right? Other option? Suppose you went to a Catholic hearing school. How many students in the class? Oh, geez, 60? 60? 70? In Catholic school?
You know, they make babies right and left.
Oh, they make babies right and left, okay. I don't know, is Lutheran school the same? I don't know. Anyway. So they were the two choices. Catholic school and deaf students in a classroom? How many? 7. So I think about my years at the Catholic deaf school, and maybe some of them were lost. Because imagine, 7 kids compared to 50.
Had I joined the other two schools, I would have been lost. I would have been lost.
I can remember at age 8, my mother told me that my public school was going to take me out, pull me because I was a little bit more hearing than some of the other deaf students. But that administrator there, he didn't want to mess around with the Catholic nuns. So they kept me there until I guess I was about age 13. You know, that school was oral. But I was in a situation where I had several, there were deaf people in the class. There were some brothers and sisters who were older too. And they would sign things like bathroom, lunchroom, outside. And then I found out many years later that my school was oral. But anyway, the one bad part about that school was that I really had a bad feeling that there were other students in the class that were deaf. Some were hard of hearing, and some of them thought that they were stupid because they really couldn't answer questions. And I could, but some of them could not. So anyway, they kind of developed a negative perspective of deafness, and they didn't feel like they were like me. Maybe if I had the same
hearing loss and the same ability to read lips and the same ability to speak, you know, then it would be different, and we would find that out later, that we have those differences.
So anyway, I went to public school later. I was a success now in public school. And I had a lot of frustration, a lot of difficulties. You know, there were people there that really didn't know anything about deafness. You know, they would talk about mainstreaming like they were talking about earlier. Well, I'm sorry to say that I have some suspicions and defenses. I have seen people who have worked in a public school system in special ed who have not earned my trust. And they really have to earn my trust first. Because I learned when I was growing up, my mother and father would just accept whatever they said. before Public Law 94-142?
He did.
But now, parents get involved in the educational process. I only wish that I had that. For example, in high school, I can remember I wanted to be a lawyer at an early age, about age 8 or 9. I'd watch different TV shows like Perry Mason. The lawyer? The lawyer? The law? Yes.
Judge.
Oh, judge for the defense.
Judge.
Eight.
The man who played in, what's the name of that program called?
Taxi.
Judge Hirsch. That's it. Thank you.
Anyway, at that time, I really wanted to go to college. So they said that you had to have 2 years of sign language.
Foreign language.
I took Spanish and I put the earphones on. I was trying to explain that I couldn't understand with the earphones on. Didn't matter. They refused to accept me. They sent me to the counselor. Went to the guidance counselor and it was an old lady.
And she was head of the Spanish department. And so, they forced me to sit down for 1 year, and I kept failing the class. And it was my desire to go to college. And they didn't have the ability to make this accessible for me, and so I decided to go to summer school. And they told me that in summer school, you're going to have to try next year. And finally, I got a friendly Spanish teacher, and I passed.
And I remember seeing you when I was a senior in high school. I was in an English class. And I would go to, the movies, the films every day. And I'd say, why am I seeing all these films? And well, you could read and write, and you got to go to college, you got to know how to read and write. And then one time I went to my English class and I said, writing? I'm supposed to write a composition, right? No, I have to do that in college. No.
Oh, you're in a class for general education, and that you need a college prep class. Are you doing it?
No.
Oh. Okay,
would it help if I speak?
Oh, that would be good.
Because the interpreters aren't following. What do you think? Think they'll be okay?
Yourself?
Sure, that'd be fine.
Okay. Oh man, I forgot how to talk. Is anybody here a speech therapist? Do we have any speech therapists in here? You're a speech therapist?
He's gone. Speech therapy.
Oh, you go to speech therapy.
I can understand you.
Thank you. Anyway, let me remember. Anyway, I was supposed to be in college stuff, and they told me, no, you're in a class for younger students, and they never told me. So you mean to tell me I spend 3 years, 2.5 years of my high school career in class for younger students? They didn't tell my parents, they didn't tell me. And so I went into the guidance counselor and I changed my... So like in the end of October, we changed my whole schedule. They didn't want to do it. I had one or two teachers who really believe because they see this guy, he's real bright, he knows what's going on. Same classes. And then get towards the end of my junior year, in terms of writing letters of recommendation, they were kind of like, really in their head, no chance in H-E-L-L. I understand that if you go H-E-L-L, the people take it a little bit easier. Anyway. And I ended up getting accepted. I applied to college and I ended up getting accepted. And here in my high school, I just didn't believe that I could do that. And you have to understand that part of my background. And that's why I'm out there and don't always want to take people's word for it. And then I remember my classmates that I thought were dumb. In fact, fact they were not dumb, but they were deprived of opportunity to get an education. They were denied the opportunity to learn about the world. Mm-hmm. And for Miss Pauline, one thing I have to remember recently, I'm going to tell one short story before we go back to the girls. I'm afraid that that's going to make funny faces. Is she looking funny at me? Okay, thanks.
It's all right.
When the Catholic school told me, the Catholic school professors, when they told me that they wanted me to go to public school, I was one of the most excited kid in the world. I was so happy, I was so thrilled, and I just, oh man, I'm finally going to the public school, a public school for that matter. Why? Okay. At the time I was like 3 years old, I played with kids in the neighborhood. And I knew that I didn't quite understand what they were talking about. Of course, I was getting a lot of real club. I got kids teasing me, they were calling me dumb, they called me retard. A good example is a football game, right? I'm on a team with playing football, you know? And I'm over here, the quarterback goes back, he shows the pass, the receiver drops the ball. I'm on the line just blocking. He drops the ball, they kick me off the team. I mean, this was the kind of stuff they were doing, or I had a little glass of wood and they would break up a stick of a buck and put it in the wood and give it to me and expect me to drink it. And of course I didn't drink it, but it was like the constant, my God, it was really kind of pepper on me. So anyway, I just thought that if I only went to the school they went to, that I would understand what they're talking about. And so finally I went to the public school, and the first 2 years, you have to understand, we're trying to adapt. We're trying to divide. And sometimes things we kind of sensitive or kind of painful, kind of ignore that. You talk to anybody who's disabled in the last 10, 15 years, they realize that you don't talk about your deafness, or you don't talk about your blindness, or you don't talk about your job or party, or you don't talk about the fact in the wheelchair. Because if you do, people think that you're using that as a crutch, or people think you're trying to ask the pity, of course, and we're not asking for that. But that's the attitude of that thing. And so I realized that I still didn't know. And you know, for me, you know, like one lady came up to me and said, "No, you can talk or you can hear, why didn't you speak, you know, when you can, you know, instead of silence, you know?" And I had numerous deaf friends who have speaking abilities. They don't speak because when you speak, people assume that you can hear. People assume that you can understand. People get a little sloppy or they're not sensitive. And you know, for me, and see the amount of discrimination that was put on me, can you imagine what it was like? So sometimes I feel maybe it'd be better off if I was really profoundly deaf, but then I wouldn't know what was really going on because I couldn't understand it. So anyway, I used this kind of quote that if God came to me, because I think this is Holden Bills, you know, and I think we're supposed to use God once in a while. Is that true? You know what I mean? So we use God and stuff, but please forgive me now. I'm not trying to build the language. But this is a true story, you know, and I like to use it if you don't mind. You heard this before, so you ready? Okay. I'm going to tell them that you came to me and you said to me, "I'm going to give you something very special, something. But before I can get that something from you, you ask me to give up something equal or greater." And so I kind of thought about that, and he said that he would give my healing to be completely healed, that I would understand everything in the world, that I have to give up something. It's fishing, okay? I don't just think that God did come to me, but he didn't. It's a kind of a story, you know? And so I said to him, "Well, I will give up my speech. And if I give up my speech and get 100% healing, I thought my world would be a much more easier place. I'll be able to sit in this room and know what's going on. I'll be able to watch TV, radio, go on the airline pilots and do everything. I know that I have the ability to stand up and try to communicate to you and my body language to understand. Yeah. And so that particular session story, because I want people to realize that people come up to me and they say, oh yeah, wonderful boy. Oh, come on, why did you jump into my body, into my shoes, and walk a day? And then you will understand what my world is like. I spent 20 days in Alabama at the main cut off part of the time from communication. Not always knowing what's going on. And yet there are people out in deaf education, there's people out in special education who really think that deaf children should be mainstream for that interpreter to come to again. You know? And they think that's the way it should be. Yeah, I'm saying. But if you only know that it's like, you know what I mean? If you're a black person, you walk a mile in my shoes. I think if all of you had the opportunity to walk a mile in my shoes, Beth's shoes, Mary's shoes, Sarah's shoes, and all the shoes of all the people in the world, I think you would have a much more sensitive understanding of how we live life. We are not asking for pity. All we're asking for is opportunity. And one thing the Hilton Village is doing is giving us the opportunity to be here, not as special people, but being here as a group of people with a wonderful culture and a village of intention. Well, actually, all of you have come to that for tonight. Is that right? And you can laugh at that a little bit. That's it. So, you know, you see the beautiful dining abilities, the best locker. It was wonderful. Yeah. So, I think I'm out of rules for now. So, I'm going to pass it over to Pat. I'm sure she's going to talk to me later.
Thank you. You can go on. You said something about your hearing.
I didn't. You know, honestly, I'm the kind of person that you will not find in school for the deaf. Okay? I'm the person who will be put in a public school. Okay? The only reason I end up in a Catholic school for that is that I'm Catholic. You know? And I have a sister who's a nun, you know what I mean? But your parents, when you have a child, you're not going to answer. And it just happened to be that way, you know what I mean? My hearing loss, I have a severe hearing loss in my left ear, and my right ear have a mild to severe at the lower middle frequency, and that high frequency has nothing. But basically, what that means is that I basically hear myself talking, I can hear you laugh and everything, but in terms of the discrimination with me, the ability to understand speech is very, very poor. Some person came up to me today, after I was signing, you know, and all of a sudden I changed and I was speaking, she said, my God, you sound just like a hearing person. And you know what I did? You know, when you're raised Catholic, you have to be polite. And you have to say thank you, even if you don't want to say thank you, you know. And so I say thank you. I like this guy, you know? He had that nice shirt, you know? Yeah, and it calms me down a little bit. Stay there.
You're a straight man.
Hey. Straight man. Okay. Excuse me.
Okay. That's about enough. Okay, now back to Mary. Did you say
how much hearing loss you had? Well, the word they use is moderate, I guess.
Could you explain what you can or what you can't hear?
Well, I don't know the numbers. I can hear a little bit.
What can you hear?
I can hear thunder without a hearing aid. No, I cannot hear conversations, however. With a hearing aid, I can hear conversations, yes. But I do not use it now. It gives me too much headache. And so I'm very, very close to being completely deaf. But
okay. You can hear conversations, but you can't hear the words. Is that true?
I can hear when people are talking, when we're one-on-one. But in a large room that's filled with people in various conversations going, no, I couldn't. It's
too much background noise, but individuals, one-on-one, I could have a conversation, I could use the phone, and the hearing aid has to have a lot of power to it so I can hear fairly well with it. But I will not use voice with many people around because it's uncomfortable for me, but one-on-one
okay.
I would be comfortable.
Brenda, how much hearing loss does Danny have?
He has profound loss, which is one step below complete. He can hear low sounds, especially with his hearing aids on, but nothing in the high frequencies. If you know decibels, he can hear at 500 and 1,000 decibels, but after 1,500, we get nothing even with his hearing aids. So, low sounds. It's like I was telling someone, some of the sounds we make in speech, he can hear speech, he can hear us talking to them. If we say his name, he'll turn around to us. But he can hear the letters like D and M and P. Those are low frequency sounds, but he can't hear like S and F and T, he can't hear those letters. So it's like trying to read a page where half of the letters are gone. Yeah, some of it you can figure out, but it's very difficult. The theory of teaching someone through the oral method, to me, seems like trying to teach a child who's blind to see just by making them work harder. I mean, if you're deaf, why would you try and educate somebody through their weakest system, which is their lack of hearing? Why would not you use a visual system so that they could understand? I've had people tell me that Danny has enough ability that he could go into an oral program and succeed. And yes, I believe he could learn, you know, he is learning to speak, and I believe he could make himself understood to other people, but I don't believe he would understand all that was coming into him without the sign language. And I think it would be very unfair to try and force him concentrate and try and understand through a system that doesn't work well.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask, for instance, Mary said she went to a residential school. Is that a special school for the deaf, or is that like a public school?
It's all deaf school. It's
okay.
Not a public school. It's a residential school. You just sleep there in a dorm.
Right, okay. So I'm wondering then if you would have a knowledge of where, or if you, you know, it looks like there is a direction that the educational institutions are heading, or the educational community is heading. Are they trying to mainstream all of the deaf children? Or are they going to think about providing, for instance, interpreters as part of a schoolroom setting?
Of course, different school districts are at different places. I feel we're very lucky in Tacoma to have a strong program for the hearing impaired. People who come from smaller rural communities.
Pennsylvania School for the Deaf. I'm a teacher there too. We both work with families that have deaf parents for hearing kids. I mention that because I think it's a good example. The parents went to a residential school for the deaf way back when sign language was forbidden. They never really learned that much. They sort of got by. They graduated, but they were really undereducated. They never really got good jobs. They did manual labor. Then they went on welfare. They had trouble understanding the world. Their families didn't sign. They didn't sign with each other. There really wasn't any communication. They made up their own signs, and they sort of picked up what they could get from each other and from other people. But they lived in their own world. And they had four kids. They came and took three of the kids, social workers did. One was put up for adoption. Two kids were put in foster homes. and they were ready to take the fourth kid when Mike and I got involved and tried to help that family. But the county's idea was the parents are deaf. They really can't handle their kids, and so we took them. They took them, excuse me. The parents were trying to struggle through the loss of their kids, why they were taken, why they were stolen, really. And the parents became, well, their mental illness began, and they went downhill. They were so frustrated, in and out of mental hospitals, all because of their struggles of trying to understand what was happening in this crazy world. That's just one example of the kind of thing that can happen, with starting with a lousy education. I don't know if I'm making sense. I hope so. Yeah, you want to add?
I'm going to give you a little bit of picture about deaf education, a little bit of what's happening now. Mm-hmm. You understand the first deaf education was for deaf students. Okay. Some were fine, but deaf people, deaf ministers. And so, so it wasn't school for the mentally retarded children, it was school for CP, it was school for deaf students, and most of them were by ministers, which is kind of interesting. It was all in, it was a deaf teacher was teaching in those schools until about in the 1850, there was a conference of deaf, no, educators of deaf in Malaya. Was that Malaya, was that in Spain?
Italy.
And where they passed a resolution that forbidden sign language. And the folks told them, well, what happened? They fired all the deaf teachers and were just saying R. And so it continued about the 1970s where social communication popped up. And then more and more exceptions popped up. Deaf people still were kind of a minority, very, very silent, until linguistics and anthropologists discovered this wonderful, really unique language, visual gesture called American Sign Language. Once they did that, once they identified that, deaf people began to come out, mm-hmm. began to feel more proud of themselves. Okay. What is deaf education nowadays? Back there, most children were educated in school system. Now, probably one third about that number educated in residential schools like that. You understand, we don't call them residential schools. We call them summer schools like that. Okay. Long time ago, they, quote, were isolated. Children stay there all year round. They may go home maybe Christmas or summertime. Nowadays, summer schools like that, they have programs for the community. particularly peer cultivating schools like that, you have kids going to Germantown Academy, which is a Quaker school for mainstreaming, we teach sign language to people in the community. We have lectures, we're very, very open. We take deaf students on Atlas-bound courses now. But you understand, that's only one third, but you understand the majority of deaf students are going to mainstream programs, but it's also day program. I want you to understand there are some places in our state that have, that don't have a residential program, that have a day program. Mm-hmm. You know, that means that deaf students are together in self-contained classrooms within a larger public school system. Okay. That's a lot better than being just mainstream run student affection. I work in South Dakota where I was like the main. You know, South Dakota is so big, and you know, the incidence of deafness is so small. And so what happened was that one deaf kid would be in one school district. Yeah, and so that doesn't really work, so we need to have, I'm going to stop, okay.
The reason why I'm saying that is that we need to conclude at 10 o'clock and I want the people to feel free to leave. So if you have some questions that you want to ask, I'm opening up now for you, giving an opportunity to ask some questions.
I work as a family counselor, and one of the things that interests me in particular is parent-child relationships. In the 19 years that I've been working, I've only worked with two or three sets of deaf parents working with their children. your story of the parents losing their kids wasn't the case in those three families. Their families stayed together. But I've worked with a number of families that have been torn apart. And I've seen that pain and experience in hearing parents as well. Earlier I went to Mike's workshop on trust. And you were talking about part of where children learn trust is when they cry, their parents come and pick them up and comfort them. And I thought to myself, when the baby's in the other room crying, you don't know until you see them. And then I saw Beth in the sanctuary watching an interpreter with one eye and her child with the other. And I realized that you must have to spend an extraordinary amount of time watching your babies, more than hearing people, because hearing people often rely on their ears to hear their children.
That's true. The other thing we had about that was baby criers. Now they have an alarm at home. Mm. It's a small device that has a light on it. So when the baby cries, it does the same thing. It sets off the alarm, or sets the doorbell or phone, or they've all connected with lights, and we really need to pay attention to that and to the kids.
Do you know that little children here, and they walked out of the room, so they're listening for their mommies and daddies?
Mm-hmm.
That children don't have that. But what we try to do is to make them realize that children, they really don't want to leave. Sometimes go in the other room, but they may not want to go in the other room because they really have to see the parents to feel some sense of security. And over the period of time, when they get older, they realize that the parents will be in the other room when they're playing in the other room.
When you were praying the prayer tonight and you asked God to pay attention, to hear your prayer, that struck me too as a relationship issue that children have with their parents. One of the ways that we learn trust is by being listened to. One of the families that I worked with, a two-year-old child would throw tantrums. All two-year-old children throw tantrums. But this child, who was a hearing child, would throw tantrums like this. No noise. And his parents had the advantage of, if they didn't want to pay attention to the tantrum, they'd just look away. And he'd run around in front of them. I'm always teaching parents to ignore their children appropriately and to pay attention to them when they're good. For that parent, it was a little easier.
I can remember when Danny learned the trick very young, that if I was scolding him and he didn't want to listen to me, all he had to do was close his eyes. He couldn't hear me.
Look at me.
Yeah, he could still keep his eyes closed.
Yeah.
My son does the opposite. As a deaf person, a deaf child, once they pay attention to him, I pull his head around.
And he pulled my head.
My head around again.
And he wants to pay attention.
Danny too.
Yeah.
More questions
now.
What do you think?
I think that you're noticing here.
I'd like to take this in a different direction. And we're talking about our experience of a little children. Let's talk about our experience as deaf adults. And all I can say for myself and for my dialogue with deaf adults, that's a lot of the community don't pay attention to us. Or they kind of ignore us, or they kind of patronize us. And what's nice about Hilton Village is that I didn't see any sense of patronizing, thank God for that, because if they were patronizing, then I would have been a little bit mean, maybe not really Catholic or to thank yourself for that. In the divine, I accept people really don't trust grown people because they never listen. I had a meeting this past year. We had like four deaf people in the community and two human teachers. What's really interesting is that every time a deaf person says something, the human person says, "Back." That person says something, the human person says, "Back." No, and I said, "It's back." So finally, I took over the leadership of the meeting. Mm-hmm. And said, "There's one rule here. The deaf person is going to say something, and there will be no back. You will listen." Yeah. I'm trying to tell people, gotta listen. You mean to tell me that my 38 years, but how old is your back? Are you going to tell me tonight? How old is your? Yeah. 34?
32.
32? Right, she's young. Wow. 32 years? You must be the same age as me, right? You're younger than me, too?
Yeah.
Okay, anyway. And I'm always amazed that they don't listen to her. They don't. I mean, there's very, very few young people that listen. Which is why, when I take that stage, and you ask my body language and something, hey, I'm making sure they're listening. It's just amazing. And the worst people are not, and the people in deaf education. These are the people who really work with deaf children, and they're the ones who have not listened to deaf people. They have not. Yeah. And hopefully in the next 10, 15 years, deaf people and deaf educators and deaf fear we'll talk to them together in a collaborative fashion. Because all we have is these deaf children to grow up to be successful deaf adults. And the reason that we feel passionate is that when these deaf kids grow up to be deaf adults and leave school, these people will not hear of them. But me and Beth and Mary, we see them, we hear them. We see the failures. We have also seen disaster. And the reason I'm saying it, hopefully when you leave here, you will see very successful, deaf and deaf, very, very independent. You see that lack of a human child. You can go back in your community and you say some people that, oh, that's awful. Do you mean to tell me that there was a deaf mother? How could she do that? Ah. I mean, hey, deaf people be around for a long time. They even had them babies for a long time. And they've done a tremendous job. Yeah? But you hear that. You hear that they just can't believe that we can be successful. Yeah. So, anyway. The other thing I want to say to you is that you look at me, right, and I'm talking. Some people think that I'm broader than that. Lies, because that doesn't talk. Uh-oh, you disagree? Oh. I'm so happy I have a sense of humor. But you know, but it's true, you see that a lot of time. You know, I was working in the staff coach group for that guy at Cable High Healing. He was having trouble in school, he was not really learning. And people were telling me, oh, you should be in the school for that. You should be in the public school. He's so much brighter. Oh, but he looked brighter because they were the students. But we had deaf students you couldn't see. He was so much brighter, so much more stuff. So we had deaf psychologists, deaf doctors, and deaf lawyers who don't speak. We got PhDs. They're brilliant. Yeah, but people don't, they look at the fact that if you don't speak, you must be dumb. That's where the word comes from, deaf and dumb. So I want you to realize that don't pay attention to the speaking. Some deaf people do speak, do not pay attention to that. Look at the whole life. Look at the accomplishment. The one thing that really burns me up is people here are really good, but I was really afraid that somebody would come up to me and go, "Michael."